welcome to Data Science Perspectives. This series focuses on analytics and data science professionals from across industry to learn about how their career unfolded, what skills they look for when hiring, and what trends they think are coming next. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Let's get to it. Welcome to this episode of Data Science Perspectives. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Today, we're going to be joined by John Carter. He's currently the Director of Analytics Strategy at the University of California, Davis. He and I have known each other for a number of years since he worked at Schwab in San Francisco. Ironically, he had spent 10 years in Atlanta prior to moving to San Francisco when he worked for Equifax, but we didn't bump into each other when he was there. He's had an impressive career at a number of large companies before landing in his current role. His career started with Donnelley Marketing, which was a big player in the analytics space at the time, and then moved on to Citibank. He spent several years with Acxiom before landing in Atlanta to work with Equifax, where he rose over a decade to the role of Chief Data Officer. From Equifax, he went out to San Francisco to take on the role of Senior Vice President of Enterprise Analytics for Charles Schwab, and in that role, he helped a variety of business groups make more effective use of their data and analytics as their analytical capability grew. Since moving to UC Davis, he now works on partnering with companies to bring real-world data and problems to students so that they can work on them as part of their capstone course and part of their curriculum. And he attempts to help prepare those students for their jobs as they graduate. He also volunteers as the chief data officer for a nonprofit called Grace Science. He's got a bachelor's in math, a master's in statistics, and a PhD in statistics, all from the University of Connecticut. And with that, let's welcome John to the show. Well, hey, John, thanks so much for joining me today on the show.
Well, glad to be here, Bill. Looking forward to it.
So I always like to start out with where people began. And much like myself, you began with an academic background in statistics, but then you've ended up, obviously, in being an executive in the world of data and analytics. So what first got you into statistics, and then how did you make that move over into a career in data and analytics?
Well, thanks, Bill. Well, when I was in college at the University of Connecticut many, many years ago, I was a math major, but I really didn't know what I wanted to be. And I was good at math, like a lot of people in our field are, but I really didn't love it. Then towards my junior year, I got exposed to statistics, and I really love the fact that in statistics, you're actually solving real world problems. And so I just found that so interesting. In fact, I went into graduate school in statistics simply because I had this academic curiosity about just learning more and more about the field. As far as my early in my career, you know, I started off as a college professor for a couple of years, but I got a little bit bored by that. I really wanted to use my skills to solve problems in the real world. So I got a job at a company called Donnelley Marketing in Stamford, Connecticut, where I was a statistician, and I did a lot of, you know, predictive modeling, geodemographic segmentation. It was a direct marketing firm, so we did a lot of direct marketing analysis. And I really loved the fact of being able to, you know, equate what you're doing to actual business results. But I have to admit, back then, you know, the analytic professionals weren't paid a lot of money. So not like today. And so I had a family, had a couple of kids. I needed to make more money. And I got offered a job in Citibank as a product manager. So I basically changed careers, and I went to become a product manager and running a business unit at Citibank. And I learned a tremendous amount of business. And then the next job after that, Donnelley Marketing called me back and said, "Hey, John, we've got a lot of problems in our product development area. Will you come back and help us fix it?" So I went back as the head of product development. I ran software development. I ran data development. Company was acquired by Strategic Mapping. I moved out to Silicon Valley, and I got very much involved in building products. But at one point in time, I just sat back and said, you know, I'm really not a software guy, okay? And I'm not really kind of a marketing guy, but really I'm a data and analytics person. And at that point in time, I realized I wanted to get back to my true passion, which is, you know, solving business problems using data and analytics. And so I then made the decision. I went back, I joined Acxiom, I led their analytics division. And then ever since there, my career has been solely focused in data and analytics. It took me a while to get there, but I also found that some of those other experience kind of gave me an appreciation of some of the other functional areas that now are so important to collaborate with as an analytic professional.
Yeah, for people who haven't been around for a while, they may not be aware, but companies like, you know, R.R. Donnelley, haven't heard of them in a while, but, you know, back in the day, they would have been an A-list company. I mean, that was one of the companies that was really cutting edge in analytics. And so if you think about young people young in their career today, you know, a cool place to be would be one of these Silicon Valley companies who's well known for analytics. Back then, some of these big agencies like Donnelley and Axiom and so forth, they were the cutting edge analytics of the day. And some of them, like Axiom, obviously is still around and still a big powerhouse. But that's great because you effectively got in on the ground floor of a lot of this stuff.
Yes. Way back when, I think I knew just about everybody in the analytics profession back then.
Yeah.
We were using tree diagrams and other types of things. And then we saw the explosion in financial services and other industries along the way.
Well, you mentioned the financial services. Actually, that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. You know, you've spent a good chunk of your career in financial services in one form or the other. And, you know, I'd be curious about some of the similarities you've seen both across those various companies and across time, and maybe some of the things that have changed the most over the years.
Well, I think, you know, financial services was one of the industries that really recognized the value of analytics, you know, early on and spent a lot of time kind of building capabilities. But as I worked in financial services and worked in large companies in particular, one of the things I found is that in order to really impact the organization with analytics, it became harder and harder over time because organizations got bigger and more complex. So one of the things, you know, many different challenges that we faced in financial services with large companies, you know, competing priorities, getting the right talent, executive support. But one of the biggest problems, to be honest, I find it still kind of is an issue today, is really kind of like the data and technology infrastructure. Okay, because financial companies, they're acquiring companies, they're bringing in new data. They're motivated to do things quickly and don't always have all of the governance and things of that nature in place. So that became a big challenge, is to try to create the right data and technology infrastructure so that analytics could be done quickly, efficiently, and satisfy, you know, a wide range of diverse users within a financial services company.
Yeah, and as you rose up the ranks, is there anything you would say was sort of your style as an executive in terms of kind of how you ran your teams and also how you would advocate for what your team was attempting to accomplish across the broader organization?
Sure. Well, of course, early in my career, you know, I had very small teams, you know, 5-10 people. But as I, you know, as I grew up, went up the ranks, and my teams got bigger, you know, where we're dealing with, you know, 50, 100, 200 people. And it became impossible for me to kind of deal with, you know, every single analytical project that we were doing. We were dealing with hundreds of projects, you know, every single day. So the approach that I really took is really focus my time on really creating the right organizational alignment, the right prioritization processes, getting the right talent, and then actually empowering teams. Okay, so making sure that the teams were really empowered to deliver the analytics to meet the business needs in terms of the people who they were actually supporting. So really empowering the teams. At the same time, teams often needed help. So, you know, what I would spend a lot of time doing is kind of working with business partners or touching base with business partners. Yes, the CEO and the chief operating officer, of course, and EVPs, but also kind of like, you know, the vice president of marketing or the, you know, the vice president of operations or the call center, and really kind of talking to them, one, to help, you know, essentially grease the skids for the analytics team, uncover any issues in terms of collaboration between the teams, and also help, you know, evangelize for the importance of analytics as it relates to their business. Because oftentimes, you know, in these organizations, funding becomes kind of an important consideration. Everybody wants analytics, but not necessarily everyone wants to fund it. So kind of the education of executives in terms of what it means in order to kind of provide the analytics that these businesses are looking for.
Yeah, and when you did that effort to get people to both understand the value and then buy into that value, were there one or two levers you tended to use the most to get them to say, okay, I'm gonna do this with you, John, and we'll trust you to get it done? Or did you literally just kind of have to customize the approach for every executive that you had to influence?
Well, of course, different executives have different styles and different ways that you need to kind of work with them. I'll talk about that in a second. But I think ultimately it came down to, like, you know, business value, really understanding kind of executives' priorities, you know, not only their long-term priorities, but what do they have to accomplish, you know, in the next year. You know, an executive might be in marketing, might be interested in kind of growing, you know, new customers, or somebody in the call center might say, I've got to create more efficiency in my organization, or the digital team might be saying, hey, I've got to translate these processes that are offline processes into online processes. So all of these executives have business priorities. So getting the analytics kind of aligned to the business priorities and basically showing them how the analytics could help them achieve their objectives, I think, is important. When you start to talk about my objectives as the analytic person, it's less impactful as if you're talking about their objectives. You know, I'm here to help you achieve your objectives. Let me help you along the way. So that was, I think, dealing with business executives in that way and trying to put things into their language and getting support relative to their priorities, I think, is really kind of an important point you made. Did you ask me about technology and other stakeholders? Like, technology is really this more focused on the business executives.
Well, if you had something unique you would use for technology, aside from what you just laid out, yeah, that'd be great to hear that as well.
Yeah, so on technology, you know, and sometimes the analysts, analytical professionals and technology, sometimes there's a little bit of, like, friction between those two groups. And so, yet, as we kind of mature in the analytic profession, we realize that our technology partners are equally as important as our business partners. We have to make sure that our analytics can be effectively deployed within the technology infrastructure of the company. So just a couple of things. One is trying to create common objectives between the technology organization and the analytics organization. I think also bringing the technology people into our team, you know, so that they become part of a virtual team, inviting them to our business partner meetings, you know, when we have a win in terms of a major milestone, having them part of the celebration. So really, I find with the technology teams, it's really kind of creating that partnership is so vitally important. So it's more collaborative, and it doesn't become kind of a confrontational type of situation.
You know, I think you said one thing that I'd like to reinforce because it's so important, which was focusing on the priorities of those executives you're dealing with, because it's not implying anyone's has malice or is a bad person, but at the end of the day, they just don't care about your priorities to the extent they care about their own priorities. And even the nicest person is going to be, you know, wanting to make sure they keep their job, and they're going to want to make sure when they have a clear path to hit their priorities, if they could then help you also hit yours, that's gravy. Mm-hmm. But unless you get them clearly hitting theirs, you're going to be kind of pushing a ball uphill all along. So I think that's a great tip, and one that I think often takes people a lot of years to actually come to not just understand that logically, but truly believe it and experience the reality of it. And I know it took me a lot of years before I really fully, I think, yes, understood that, took that to heart.
Well, let me give you a quick example. It's like, at one time, you know, we had this data science lab, and we kind of were innovating and trying to come up with new ways to support the business. And the team came up with a new way of doing attrition modeling. And because, you know, churn, attrition is a problem with many businesses, and they created this really cool algorithm. But in order to implement the algorithm, you know, we needed to kind of get business prioritization, funding. And so presenting this to the business, it was sort of like, yeah, well, that's all well and good, but that's not our priority right now. Our priority is on acquiring new clients. So, you know, that's good, but why don't you help us do that? So I think getting that alignment, you can spend a lot of time working on some really cool stuff, but if it isn't aligned, chances are you're not going to be able to get it deployed, at least in the time frame that you may want.
Yeah, winning the wrong game is better than losing, but it's not the same as actually winning the right game. Yeah,
exactly.
So you mentioned you started with a few years in academia, and then you've recently, like myself, you've gone to university. You're at UC Davis now. back in academia after your years in the corporate world. So, you know, what, tell us a little bit about what brought you back to academia and then what are you doing exactly at UC Davis?
Sure. Yeah. So, I think at this point in my career, having been 35 years plus in the corporate world, I've got to the point in my life where now I pretty much want to, be in a situation where I'm more giving back to the community and teaching has always been a passion of mine. And in this particular situation now, what I'm trying to do and what I'm passionate about is not going back and teaching, you know, statistics or machine learning or programming per se, but what I'm focused on more is how do we get, you know, people in an analytic profession quicker up the learning curve and the things that are really important to be successful in business. So I teach classes at University of California at Davis, but I also kind of manage the, what we call the practicum or the capstone program. So what we do is we get companies to sponsor projects. These projects then are assigned to students. Students work on these projects for about 8 months. And I kind of think of them as just kind of one of my teams as when I was the analytics leader. So it's basically empowering them to go off and work with their clients and solve problems, but at the same time, giving them advice and making sure that they're aligned against the things that are most important. I think that the ability, it took me many, many, many years to really kind of learn, you know, what it takes to be successful in business. I'm hoping that with the students, I can kind of help them get to that place a lot faster than I did.
It's funny that this, the role that you just described, it's very similar to my role here at KSU. And I know, and I'm sure you do as well, various other folks from the industry who are in similar roles at universities. So I think it's become almost a standard thing these days that universities are attempting to overlay some practical experience and some real world data and you know, company projects along with the more traditional coursework, which I think is a great thing. Now that you've been in academia again, are there one or two things, not necessarily UC Davis specifically, but academia as a whole that you think we still need to work on as an industry to make the students ready to hit the ground running?
Yeah, so a couple things on that, Bill. First of all, with universities, first, I do think they play a vital role in providing the fundamental knowledge around data, statistics, algorithm development. We have now so many different people in so many different professions, you know, entering the world of analytics and data science. I mean, heck, we've got people coming in from engineering backgrounds, computer science backgrounds, even, you know, non-technical environments are coming in and say, hey, I want to learn about, you know, data and analytics. So I think there's an important role that universities have to be to kind of teach the right way in terms of doing, you know, data and analytics. And that goes right back to, you know, basic statistics and hypothesis testing and confidence intervals and some of the basics there. But having said that, because that has been going on for a while, I think what universities need to do is really kind of tailor what they're doing to real world business problems. I think, you know, at the end of the day, what's important with people coming out of universities is that they're able to solve problems to help whatever company they're going to succeed. So things like capstone projects, things like practicum projects, work study types of projects, integrating business professionals into the academic curriculum really makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think that integration of the industry and companies and the academic area is really, really important. You know, I would also kind of say one thing too, as a hiring manager at Schwab and Equifax and some of the other places that I looked at, you know, getting talent is so important, right? You know, getting the right talent with the right, you know, skill sets, the right culture, the right ability to, you know, deliver value is a hard thing to do. And when I've inherited analytical teams, I have staff that really all they wanted to do is program, or all they wanted to, you know, they just wanted to build dashboards, okay, but didn't really even want to deal with business problems. And those people, while valuable in one way, had limitations in terms of how much, you know, value they could give to the industry. I found, to be honest, some of the students that come out of programs like you know, Kennesaw State, UC Davis, and others, if they come out and they've had this, not only the academic experience, but some of the other experiences relative to capstones and whatnot, they come out with a much better attitude and they're quick learners. And I've actually found some of the people that I've hired out of these MSBA programs quickly within a year or so, they're surpassing some of the people that I have, you know, with like, you know, 5-10 years experience. So I do think the more you can get, you know, industry incorporated into the universities, the better students will come out and the more successful companies will be because they'll be able to hire, you know, better candidates for their jobs.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when you mentioned about the coming out with that experience. I actually have discussed here at KSU, I know I'm not going to win this battle anytime in the next decade, but, you know, I've actually come to the conclusion that for data science, and this might be true for other hands-on disciplines like engineering and computer science as well, I almost feel like we need to shift to more of the ancient model of apprenticeship being part of it, right? You didn't become a blacksmith by taking courses on how to hammer metal. You'd go sit with a guy in a shop and hammer metal for a year or two or three or however long it took. And so I'd be in favor of some kind of thing where as part of your degree, literally you have to go work for a year or two with a company and they'd have special roles that were this apprenticeship thing, which is kind of a, you know, maybe a junior role that they know they're there to learn as opposed to be a part of the staff. But it's an investment in developing the next generation, because in effect, what ends up happening, everyone who hires these new grads, whether they're an undergrad or a graduate degree, for the most part, you're stuck training them on all of the day-to-day practical stuff on their first job anyway. So in my mind, if we just formalize that and we all kind of accept it and get it out of the way, then when we really hired a graduate, maybe they'd be ready to actually be productive on, you know, the first couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah, I support you. And I'm sure it's going to take you less than a decade to make that happen.
So, you know, you've talked about a lot of different things so far. If you think back as your career progressed, what's one or two of your traits that you think most helped you succeed and stand out against the peers that you had at the time as you would get a, you know, get a promotion or get an increase in responsibility?
Well, I think, you know, some of the things I kind of mentioned a little bit before, but making sure that you establish good partnerships with business executives so that you're not an isolated analytical team, but you're rather kind of part of the fabric of the company and being able to show value. I think my personal skills, I think communication is probably one of the things I think that I have some of the ability to kind of take this complex technology and kind of boil it down to like, what will this actually do for a business? Or if somebody needs an explanation, to just give them a very simple, easy to understand explanation. So many times you'd be in meetings and you see people kind of presenting analytics and people's eyes start to, you know, gloss over and they get lost in the detail, and being able to kind of elevate the conversation to something where you can actually communicate in business terms, I think is something very, very important and really helps people be successful, and including myself. I think just the other thing is just having passion, vision, energy. I mean, you want to be going into an organization and getting people to be, you know, champions of what it is that you do. So having that energy and passion, I think, is also a point for you. Whatever role somebody takes, just be passionate about it, have energy about it. That will help help you succeed.
That's a really good point. I think if anybody thinks about any meeting they've been in, any class, a speech by a you know, politician, anything like that, when somebody's actually energized about it and into their own topic, it is infectious, right? And when someone's up there, obviously just, I got to talk about this today. It's hard to get that attention. And I think that, you know, that's critical. So that really ties to another thought then, which is, you know, students coming out today, as you point out, back when we came out of school, there weren't that many opportunities in the analytics world. And there were, you know, there were a number of companies that were hiring, but it was really easy to identify. If you wanted to go into business, here's kind of your options. Mm-hmm. Whereas today, I mean, virtually every industry is hiring, even within industries. I mean, if you can go on a financial institution, you could work in the risk area. You could work in the security area. You could work on the consumer area. I mean, there's so many different types of analytics. So what advice would you give to students as they're starting their career? How do they find their niche in what is now an overwhelmingly complicated landscape with dozens or hundreds of options instead of a handful?
Right. So I think a couple things. I think, first of all, it would be good for students starting their career to really try to understand, you know, the different types of positions that are available, right? In other words, is it really hardcore, you know, machine learning coding? Is it more being a liaison between analytics and the business? Is it more data engineering and or whatnot? There's so many different types of roles, but having a knowledge of what they are, and then also, you know, what are you kind of passionate about? What is it that you want to do? And having a plan. I think everybody should have, I mean, everybody, we talk about having career plans. I don't necessarily think people need to have like a 30-year or 20-year career plan, but over the next 3 years or 4 years or 5 years, what do you really want to accomplish? You know, or do you really want to hone your technical skills? Do you want to become more expert in, you know, a certain industry, whether it's financial service, a certain discipline like marketing? So really kind of thinking about what you would be happy doing and having a plan to do that, and then focus your job search on those areas that will kind of meet those, you know, let's say 3-year goals, as well as kind of make you happy. And one of the things I learned is that, you know, you have to be happy in terms of what it is that you're doing. You want to go in every day and be excited about work. So if you pick something that you're not excited about, those commutes to the office are pretty painful. You know, if you dread going into the office, you want to be happy. And if you're not happy, you got to find something else, but be willing to change too. You know, you may come up with like, this is my plan over the next 3 years, but 1 or 2 years into it, say, hey, this isn't working. You know, try something else.
Two interesting points there. One is, you know, finding something that you're going to enjoy. Too many times you take a job for money and go, I'm going to have so much money, so on the weekends I can really go have fun and I can take nice trips. But you're looking past the 5 days of what could be utter hell and a ton of pressure and a ton of things that you're not enjoying at all to get there. And very few people, I think, can sustain something they're really genuinely not enjoying just because it gets them a bigger paycheck. And I've seen, folks just say, I'm done. You know, I can't do this. But I think another interesting point you made about finding your passion, you know, it's so accepted these days to change jobs. And honestly, if a student or not a student, if a person 2 or 3 years in came to me and let's say I'm running a marketing analytics team and they said, you know, I went into the risk analytics area. I really thought I liked it, but here's exactly what I did and didn't like about it. And here's why I think given that I would enjoy marketing more and I'd like to give it a try. I would love that. You know, I would hire someone like that all day long. I wouldn't consider it bad that they were trying to switch from risk to marketing. If they could kind of explain the journey and how they got there, I might be excited to have someone now who really understands why they want to come and do marketing analytics and understands their skill set better. What do you think about that?
No, absolutely. I think that's, and having that passion, you know, if it's marketing analytics, then, you know, you may not know anything about marketing analytics to begin with if you had a career in risk, but there's plenty of information out there that you can learn, plenty of articles that you can read. And then, you know, having that energy and passion, to your point, you know, somebody comes in and says, hey, this is what I know, and this is what I want to learn. And I have the other fundamental skills that I need for the job, whether it's like doing analysis, creating, generating insights, dealing with business partners. If you have the core skills and you have the passion for that area, then yeah, that's the kind of people we want to hire for sure.
I'll put you on the spot. Quick 30-second answer, because we're, running out of time here. If you had to make one prediction of something that's going to be big in the next 3 to 5 years in the world of data science analytics as we move forward, is there anything that jumps out in your mind?
Well, I hate to be boring and just kind of say something that maybe is not something new and exciting, but this whole area of people call it data literacy, which is more a question of the use of data and analytics is going to be prevalent over every single functional area, every single part of the organization. It's impossible for a data analytics organization to do all the analytical work for everybody. So what really has to happen is to be able to empower people outside of analytics to do analytics. But that requires training. It requires education. It requires a certain level of governance because, you know, people get access to data that don't know how to use it, they can make a lot of mistakes. I think an executive that I work with, you know, a couple of companies ago used to say, a fool with a tool is still a fool. So, you can give people access to data, but if they don't know how to use it, they're going to make a lot of mistakes. And that's what we really want to avoid. So in order to hit that, we need to have, technology to make the data available, but we also have to have education, support, and tools to enable people to do things, the right way.
Well, thanks so much for joining me today. I think folks will find this valuable, and who knows, maybe we can arrange a UC Davis, KSU data science department head-to-head hackathon competition or something one day.
Oh yeah, I'm sure we'd love to do that. So,
well, thanks so much again for your time, John.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me. Enjoyed this. Take care.